For those of you who wonder what's going on, this is all Frank's fault and Diane Garrett's fault. She's sitting right there watching too. They were talking, I think it was Diane Garrett, but Frank and Diane were talking and they were going over Yankee Doodle Dandy and Yankee Doodle Put a Feather in Your Cap and wondering what this is all about. And I told Frank, I says, I actually got a sermon on that. And he looked at me like, yeah, right. So you're wondering what this has to do with a high day sermon, I'm sure, about this time. But every American learns about the great American war hero, Yankee Doodle, from childhood. I mean, when you were kids, probably before you even went to school, you heard about Yankee Doodle. And in addition to being a famous pony rider, legend says that once he stuck a feather in his hat and called it macaroni. Some of you might have heard this story before. Pretty bizarre behavior, don't you think? Who can understand this nonsense? And why would they teach this to kids for generations and generations? What, after all, macaroni and hats? What does pasta have to do with hats in the first place? I mean, who would be silly enough to actually put that in their hat?
A friend of mine who's not a Christian.
Not a Christian, not watching this.
She posted that to my timeline.
Wow. Okay.
It says,
Yankee Doodle sticks a feather in his cap and called him macaroni. Yankee Doodle's friend. Okay, cool. Listen, man, everybody's worried about you.
All right. Well, see, this is a very popular topic on a high day. So now maybe everybody really is wondering, what's this got to do with God? What's this got to do with a sermon? And why are we listening to something about Yankee Doodle? But I believe that there's a lot of macaroni in the Bible. Okay? Stuff that makes no sense to us, because it's a couple thousand years old at least. But when we study the Bible outside of the culture that produced it, there's a lot of macaroni. Now, there's a couple people in this room that are fluent in different languages, multiple languages, some of them. And some things that they would talk about in their languages would be like macaroni to us. You know, what's this got to do with anything? Especially if it's some kind of obscure passage and it's something that you never heard about. Like putting a feather in your hat and calling it macaroni. Usually when we encounter macaroni in the Bible, we just skip over it and ignore it. Don't pay any attention. But sometimes we feel compelled to make up our own explanation. Maybe you've come across some people that have done this in the past and built doctrines off of it. They have special high-ranking macaroni that they've stuck in their hat. Then some people get themselves in trouble by asking about it. We pray about the macaroni and we ask for insight on the macaroni, and then we have to tell others about it. These great things that we've discovered and that nobody else knows. And you'll hear expressions like, God's Spirit has given this knowledge to me. It might be the only person that you've ever met that claims that God's Holy Spirit granted them this insight and this wonderful, they had a dream, they had a vision, they just had this thought pop into their head and they know it was from God and it was inspired. Maybe you've run into this before. I feel that Yankee Doodle loved noodles. And that's how I interpret the macaroni. And I'm trying to get others to agree with me and follow that interpretation. Because it could be special. We could be the only ones that know this. What does it mean to you? Maybe you should ask some other church leaders, ministers, people, deacons. Some might expound that Yankee Doodle Dandy gives them some other special information, and they'd want to do a sermon about that subject, about how revolutionary soldiers were so hungry that they imagined that their hats were food and they began to eat them. Think about it. That makes sense. That's a possibility. You can't just throw that out and ignore it. It's clear. It was his hat. It was macaroni. It's as good as interpretation as somebody else. You would just have to agree to disagree on that, right? They would tell us that this is how the expression, I'll eat my hat, got started. To back it up is a proof text. Whole denominations, think about this, whole denominations could be built on the differing views. One could say that you eat the hat and it literally becomes macaroni inside of you. And another group would say, well, if you eat your hat, it only represents the macaroni and it's spiritual macaroni inside of you. And they could argue back and forth and excommunicate each other and say, I'll never go to that group across town because they don't believe that the hat actually becomes macaroni. They're heretics. That's a salvational issue. And people could debate these things and have harmony over here and disagreement over here. Church splits might even happen over the macaroni. Because if people get involved, you know stuff like that is going to happen. We could cause a schism that, creates a split. Like if you hear of a church in another city that doesn't believe that the hat is actually becomes macaroni, you could go over there with your research and your theory, and you could look around and find people that you think haven't really studied this subject much, and you could sneak around and pull them off to the side and give them this newfound doctrine. Each side would proclaim that the other side is wrong. But see, the same thing happens with biblical topics today. The same thing. This saying, put a feather in his hat and called it macaroni, is so obscure. Nobody uses those sayings and nobody really knows what it means. And nobody even bothers to do a little research and study. Well, a few people do, but most people don't. They just pass it off to the side. But we're 2,000 to 3,000 years removed from the culture of the Bible. And so we have these same things. So when we hear something, when we read something, we try and put it into context of our experiences and the things that we know. And we come up with a lot of macaroni. Our language is totally different than the language the Bible was written in. So what we do is we trump each other with things like, if the King James Version was good enough for Paul, it's good enough for me. And, oh, that's wrong. You got to have this Holy Name Version to understand it. So you got to buy the Holy, you got to throw out, we'll just take some selective Hebrew words and we'll forget all of the other words because most people don't know it. So we'll get really holy by saying some selective words. Or we'll say, oh, we can't say those words at all. Somebody that comes in saying those words, they're a heretic. They got to get out of here. We got to drive them out. They're spreading false macaroni here by pronouncing words in a certain way. Nobody thinks, well, didn't he create all these languages? And originally in Babylon, didn't he split everybody up? I think about every language on the face of the earth God created. So, but let's take a quick look here, because none of this makes of the Yankee Doodle makes sense to, probably less than 1 in 100 even know what he's talking about. But guess what? I'm going to give you some newfound knowledge. And by the time today is over, you will completely understand what Yankee Doodle was doing. I promise you. But what I want to do Yeah, get my rat going the right way. All right, in here, where's the start of it? Let's play this little tune here. Okay, so in case you forgot the song, that's the little song, the little tune. So I'm going to give you the definition of macaroni, the old English definition, not look it up in Encyclopedia Britannica or whatever, and it says noodles. It's a fancy, dandyish style of gentleman's attire. A style of Italian clothing widely imitated in England in the 18th and 19th century. That's what macaroni means. All you have to do is go and look it up, and now all the things, sudden things start to make sense. But we don't talk, you don't walk up to somebody and you say, hey, that's really macaroni there that you got on. You know, and they'd look at you like, what kind of fruitcake are you? But Yankee Doodle went to town riding on a pony, stuck a feather in his hat, and called it a fancy, dandyish style of gentleman's attire. Now that makes sense. Think of all the false doctrine that was developed throughout history about becoming, eating your hat and becoming macaroni, and the church splits and the disagreements and people going back and forth, and some of them, their egos get so puffed up that their hats don't even fit anymore. So it gives them an excuse to eat the old one because they got to buy a new one because they're so puffed up and their head's so big. But let's look at some real life biblical examples of this problem. I got a few of them up here. Let's take a look at Matthew chapter 6, verse 22. It says, the lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore that light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? So does this mean that blind people are evil or full of darkness? No. But when you read it on the surface and you don't try and figure out what's going on here, you could come to that conclusion. We make macaroni every day out of scriptures like this. Now, maybe not this specific one, but it causes a lot of issues and a lot of misunderstanding. And we don't always know the answers, but my proposal today is we got to stop making stuff up. Okay? Because there's a lot of stuff being made up out there in the world. And quite frankly, sometimes people get hurt by this stuff that they make up. There's an original meaning about having an evil or a bad eye versus a good eye. And that's what it's talking about here. And history tells us that somebody with an evil eye is an idiom for stinginess, greed, things like that. And someone with a good eye is generous, charitable. But let's look at this in the full context again. In Matthew 6:19, it says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness?" Well, now, all of a sudden, if we read the verses before that, 19, 20, 21, 22, all of a sudden, in 23, all of a sudden it starts to make sense. But when people just take one verse out of context, without any knowledge of what's being said or culture or history or time or anything like that, you can make it say just about anything you want it to say. So how can we get past all this macaroni, all these problems that are being caused? You got to learn some history, some geography, some of the culture of the Bible, and a warning. I mean, I know you guys are, y'all know this, but the real culture, not what somebody says today and then something that happened in the Middle Ages or something that happened in the last 300-400 years and then transpose it backwards and say this is what biblical worship was like. You go down to a synagogue today, that's not what worship was like in the first century and before. You get a lot of traditions. And some traditions are good, but some traditions are bad. And some traditions don't matter, and some traditions matter a lot. But just because somebody says, and don't get enamored in idolatry of worshiping a nation or worship, you know, style of worship, there's a lot of freedom. It's a lot of freedom that God gives us that's out there. Some groups will meet in the morning. Some groups meet in the afternoon. You know, like Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon. Some meet on Friday night. You know, it doesn't say. It says, here's the Sabbath. It's from sunset to sunset. And it's on the seventh day of the week. But it doesn't specify a time that you have to worship other than the whole day is set aside for God. So, you got to start with Moses, and you got to build on it with the prophets and the writings. Then you add the New Testament, and after you have the solid foundation of the Bible that everybody read, that you read about in the New Testament. You know, there's a real problem out there, and people are deceived because you should be able to find Jesus in every page of the Old Testament. See, my son-in-law was really worried. He thought, he's going over the deep end here. He's talking about all kinds of things, clothing laws and, you know, purity laws and all of these things. And he'd seen some people go down a bad path. And I told him, I had a conversation with him, and I told him, He says, we need to concentrate on a lot of about Jesus in the New Testament. And I said, you can't find a page in the Old Testament where you don't see him. And I didn't hear anything about him. And it was a month or 2 months later, he came back and he told me, and I didn't know he was doing this. He said, I started to look. He says, and you're right. He says, I was looking for one page. I haven't found it yet. And it was a month or two into it. It's all about him. But people, when they don't have the foundation, it's like going to a movie at the end of the movie and trying to transpose what happened at the beginning. Or reading a book and picking it up at the last chapter and reading that and going to say, oh, here's what this book is all about without reading what leads up to it. It's one book, one movie, one whatever. You've got to get the whole thing. That's where you come up with ideas like Jesus came along and abolished his father's law and nailed it was all nailed to the cross. And we don't have to worry about those things. Well, let's take a look at this. Matthew 22:35 says, and one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, teacher, what is the great commandment in the law? And Jesus said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Some people interpret this to mean that all you have to do is love God and love your neighbor, and that's it. You don't have to worry about the Sabbath or anything else. And I've had people come up and tell me that. But they don't know how to love God. And they don't know how to love your neighbor. They don't even know that Jesus was quoting out of the Torah. He's quoting out of from Moses on these two laws and how you do those laws. They don't know that, oh, okay, well, the first four are if you love God, this is what you do. And the last six are if you love your neighbor, this is how, what you do for that. And, but we only have to do two. There's two categories, and I should have put that chart that I've got that shows, starts out with these two out of the Torah, and then the Ten Commandments, and then from the Ten Commandments, the 613 Commandments, and how it all flows down. They're all, you know, if you really love one or the other of these two, you're going to be keeping all the other ones, or if you don't, it's a violation of one of those two. But we all have our own macaroni. People don't want to look at Deuteronomy 6:5 or Leviticus 19:18, and you know, no, just let me do this. I don't have to do any of that. It's simpler. It's easy. Now, Jesus told us in John chapter. Don't I have it up there? Let me see here. Oh, okay. He told us in John 14:15. This is a simple one. You can memorize this. If you love me, keep my commandments. It's really simple. In the Ten Commandments, like I said, the first four are loving God. And they say, well, all we have to do is love Jesus. Well, he said, if you love me, keep my commandments. So, pretty simple. But it doesn't stop there. And he tells us in Malachi 3:6, Jesus is the same as this in Malachi 3:6. He says, I am the Lord, I do not change. Therefore, you are not consumed, O sons of Jacob. Now, sometimes we come up with this macaroni doctrine and we say, well, but this one over here, this changed. And even people in Sabbath keeping groups, they got a lot of well, buts. You know, this one here, I think we can just forget about that one. It's not consistent, and, you know, the church I grew up in, they just brushed it all aside real easy. He said, well, that's all the ceremonial laws there. That's, you know, or those are the ordinances, and that's what was nailed to the cross. We don't have to worry about ordinances and or some like holy days, things like that. Those are our ceremonial laws, and I've actually asked people, try and do it in a non-smart aleck way. Although that probably is what motivated it, I says, can you show me the page in the Bible or the paragraph or the break or whatever it is? And it says, well, all these over here are the ceremonial laws, and then all these over here are the moral laws. Why is it always some man's interpretation? Well, this one's a ceremonial, so we'll just ignore that one, but this is a moral law. Now, it's really easy on things like murder or something. Well, that would, you know, you can say, well, that's a moral law, so we're going to keep those. But different people will define different things as ceremonial. You know, Seventh-day Adventists don't define clean and unclean as ceremonial, but maybe the Baptists do, you know. You got to have a reason not to do these things. But as far as Jesus coming and changing everything, I think the best authority for that would be his own words. Because there's a lot of people, I don't care what your background is they think that he changed some stuff. He said, "Do not think that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For assuredly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled." And I understand different people view this, but some view it as the glass is half empty. He fulfilled it, so it's done away with, so now we don't have to do it. But then he goes on, and like in verse 19, and he says, "Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments," the least, most insignificant one that you could think of, which, you know, you got almost probably got to go to some traditions or whatever we can say, because nowhere in the Bible does it say this is the least of the commandments. And maybe God did that because that's the one people would want to break then. But, you know, so some say, well, it's you come across a nest and you can't kill the mother and the babies all at the same time and eat them all. You got to, you know, that's the least. I don't know which one is the least, but whichever one it is, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. That doesn't mean you're going to be there. Now, maybe you are. You say, "Hey, look at over there. There's Fred. He's the least of everybody up here." Anybody want to volunteer for that position? Or maybe, you know, it doesn't say you're there, so we can create some macaroni and we can debate. Some will say, "Well, no, they're just talking bad about old Fred." And some will say, "Well, Fred's here for an example so that everybody else can feel better because they're better than he is, so it makes them feel better." Verse 20 says, "For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you'll by no means enter the kingdom of heaven." So I don't know how you read that and you get out of it that it's okay, Jesus did away with it all. But people do. All right, so. Oh, no, I skipped a page here. I pulled the wrong page. Okay. Now it makes sense. Aha. The Bible's full of teachings, like I said, that the world's changed to macaroni. Here, let me give you a few. And different people have come up with different interpretations to these things. "Judge not, lest you be judged." "Turn the other cheek." "Without a vision, the people perish." "My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge." I got a really a friend. I haven't seen him in about 10 years, but he was a pretty close friend, and he used to be a Baptist minister. And he'd tell me some of the, you know, some of these Baptists, they teach you this in seminary. Or when he went, you know, "My people perish without a vision." So everybody's got to have a vision. You got to vision the new Family Life Center, and everybody's got to sign up for their pledges. And they come up with all of these things based off of all of these sayings without looking at it in the context that it's really talking about in the Bible. "We're dead to the law. Christ is the end of the law. You shall know the truth and it shall set you free." Now, look at that one. That could mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. And I don't mean like it's something specific and tied to your life. I mean it completely different. In other words, you go out and you live completely different and you do things completely differently and cause some people to violate what God says by something like that. "Christ came to fulfill the law." You know, and you got sayings, "We're not under the law anymore." Anybody ever hear that? "The law was nailed to the cross. The law was against us, so therefore it had to go." You know, that's the conclusion on some of this. We're freed from the works of the law. Anybody ever have somebody tell you that? You see, now you're starting to agree with me. There's a lot of macaroni going on here. People that don't have a clue of what those words mean or the context of what it was said. But you read it, you hear it, and you come up with your own interpretation and your own doctrine about it. And here's a really big one. This is about a 900,000 ton woman, and her name is Grace. We're under grace now. That gets rid of everything. That's like the last, that's the big 50 caliber that you pull out when all else fails. What about this one? Let me give you an example up here. Proverbs 29:18. Where there is no vision, the people perish. Like I say, JW was telling me, or not JW, JD was telling me about, he's a guy, a friend of mine in Athens, used to be a Baptist minister. You know, all the things and some of the sermons he gave on this one little verse out of Proverbs and how completely ignorant and stupidity, well, stupid that he was for even, but all of the little Baptist preachers said, you know, maybe, I don't know what they do. Maybe they copy each other. Maybe they, you know, got a book of sermons or whatever, but he had given that one. What's the rest of the story or the verse? How do we get through this macaroni? But he that keepeth the law, happy is he. Now, when you see it in the full context, it's got a completely different meaning than maybe some people would conclude. Take it apart, some of it, and just look at that. Here's another one, and I mentioned this earlier, Hosea 4, verse 6. My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. But, you know, somebody, I don't know, it was Herb or Frank, somebody was talking about, it's the guy on the radio, the rest of the, Paul Harvey, the rest of the story. So let's go through the Paul Harvey thing. What's the rest of the story here? Because you have rejected knowledge, I also will reject you from being priests for me. Because you have forgotten the law of your God, I also will forget your children. The knowledge that is talking about that his people forgot so that they're going to be destroyed is God's laws. They've rejected him and he's going to reject them. And the people don't know because they're not taught. Here's another famous one. Malachi 4:5. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. But what's the whole context of this? Why don't we just back up, it's up here, and read the verse before it. Now, I suggest we do more than one verse before and one after. Read it in the whole context, but this one clears it up. If we back up to Malachi 4, remember the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him in Horeb for all Israel with statutes and judgments. One of the things that Elijah was supposed to warn about was don't forget this stuff. Before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. If I'm talking funny, please forgive me because my tooth got broke off at the gum line this morning. But it's harder to talk, so I got to be more conscious of what's going on here. But because Jesus fulfilled the law, people automatically assume. And I read it, so I'm not going to go over it again, but let's look at Matthew 5:17. Do not think I come to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. And they say, well, he fulfilled it all. Well, let's take a look at what it says, because that's what they'll say. Well, he fulfilled it. That's why I don't have to do it. But he said, for assuredly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled. So if we really don't know a whole lot, all you got to do is go outside and jump up and down a little bit And if the ground is still there, if the earth is still there, it says, till heaven and earth pass away, look up in the sky. Do you see clouds? Do you see the sun? You know, if it's nighttime, do you see the stars, the moon? Until those are all gone, until there's no more earth, it's passed away. You can forget about ignoring God's laws. So let's go out and let's quit working for a living. Let's just all go out and steal, right? It'd be no big deal. We can eat anything we want to. As long as we can get it to slide down our throat, it's okay. We can ignore vast, multiple things. How do you treat your children? How do you treat your spouse? You know, what do you do? What don't you do? We don't have to worry about it. Let's take a look at Acts chapter 10, verse 10. It says, then he became very hungry and wanted to eat. But while they made ready, he fell into a trance. And heaven opened, and a great object was like a sheet bound at the four corners, descending to him and led him to down to the earth. In it there were all kinds of four-footed animals of the earth, wild beasts, creeping things, and birds of the air. And a voice came to him, rise, Peter, kill and eat. But Peter said, not so, Lord, for I have never eaten anything unclean, anything common or unclean. And a voice spoke to him for the second time, and what God has cleansed, you must not call common. And this was done three times. And the object was taken up into heaven again. Well, I don't know what people picture. I really don't. Probably different people picture different things. But maybe they picture a nice, clean slice of ham or something. I don't think all cooked, all ready, all seasoned up, all... maybe even on some bread with some cheese or however people want to eat it, or some bacon frying in the pan, and this is what they picture. I've never seen a representation of probably what it was, skunks and rats and snakes and who knows, disgusting things, who knows what else. See, that's my macaroni on it. It doesn't say what kind of creepy crawly things were in there, so I can come up with it, right? But it was something that was revolting. You know, people don't think about, oh, let's go over to China and look at it, where they eat monkey brains and everything else, baked wharf rat. And it's a delicatessen, right? Let's go on here. So what's the rest of the story? Let's do the Paul Harvey on this one. Okay? Acts chapter 10, verse 28. Then he said to them, you know how unlawful it is for a Jewish man to keep company with or go to one of another nation, but God has shown me that I should not call any man common or unclean. That was the purpose of the vision. Not what can you eat? And people just stop reading because they get to the point where they want. Romans chapter 3:28. You know, faith saves us. Works are bad. It says, therefore we conclude that a man is justified by faith apart from the deeds of the law. So say that's why I don't do any of this Sabbath, holy day, all of this nonsense you're doing. You're trying to justify yourself. You're trying to earn your salvation. And it's Jesus and Jesus only. Well, guess what? It always was. It was always faith from the very beginning. The faith part for your salvation didn't start in Matthew chapter 1, verse 1. It was all the way back into the Garden of Eden. It was faith. Romans 3:31. Do we then make void the law through faith? Certainly not. On the contrary, we establish the law. Well, people don't want to look at that. They don't want to take it in the context and do the whole thing because it's pretty hard to twist it into you can ignore it. But there's a lot of good that you can ignore by somehow labeling it as bad and you push it off to the side. See, does Satan really care which law you break? Which sin you do? As long as you're sinning, he's happy. It's not like, oh, here's the one over here. If I could only get everyone to do this sin. He don't care which sin it is. If you're going to poison something, and that's what sin is, you can take something that people think is really not good for you, but people think, oh, an aspirin bottle, 100 aspirins. Sooner or later, people get headaches, and they start taking one. He doesn't have to switch the whole bottle out. He's only got to put one little arsenic one in there, take one aspirin out and put it in there, mix it all up. Sooner or later, you're going to fall for it and take it. Because we all know the only reason you get a headache is you got an aspirin deficiency. That's why you got to go and get the aspirin, right? But Satan doesn't really care which one it is. Is it the Sabbath? Is it the holy days? Is it clean and unclean? It doesn't matter. Just break one of them, any of them. He don't care. And he'll give you some over here if he can deceive you over here with others. Romans chapter 7. Let's go there. I'm almost done here. Romans 7:4. What's the rest of the 7:4? Therefore, my brethren, you also have become dead to the law through the body of Christ, that you may be married to one another, to him who was raised from the dead, that we should bear fruit to God. Now, if you're reading that, you can come up with a lot of different ideas. And I'm not saying there's only one idea on something like this, but you can come up with ideas to cause you to misinterpret what's being said here, to do the opposite of what God wants you to do. And here, especially, verse 6 of Romans 7, but now we have been delivered from the law. See, we used to keep the law, but now we're delivered from it. We don't have to observe it anymore. So now we've been delivered from the law, having died to what we were held by, so that we should serve in the newness of the Spirit and not in the oldness of the letter. So what's the rest of the story here? How do we cut through the macaroni and come to the conclusion? Here Paul says in verse 12, just keep reading. You don't have to read very far. He says, therefore, and he's summing it up with what he's saying. Therefore, the law is holy, and the commandment holy and just and good.
Therefore. Why throw it out?
Either he was a schizophrenic nutcase, or the modern interpretations, the modern macaroni that's been developed over the centuries and perpetuated on, is exactly the opposite of what he was saying. They're not giving you just regular macaroni anymore. Now it's genetically modified macaroni. This is how you know the truth. 1 John chapter 2, verse 3. And I want to sum it up. I want to give you the rest of the story here. It's easy to remember. 1, 2, 3. If you can remember those things, it's as easy as 1, 2, 3. It says, now by this we know that we know him. If we keep his commandments. He who says, I know him and does not keep his commandments is a liar and the truth is not in him. I really don't understand how people fall for these things when church leaders, and it's not only Sabbath keepers, you know, guys have gotten up before from, in our lifetimes, you know, from Jim Jones to others that have done, David Koresh, convinced people there, they kept the holy days, kept the Sabbath, but they did some really horrendous things. They violated some of God's laws in a big way. Kept some, but completely violated others. So I'm not picking on some certain denomination here. So let me back up. By this we know that we know him. If we keep his commandments, not some of them, not a few of them, not the ones we like, not the ones that we're not guilty of violating, so we'll concentrate on these, and we don't want to talk about those over there, because I do my best to keep that hidden so nobody knows. So there's no way we can talk about it. He who says, I know him and does not keep his commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. When somebody starts telling you that there's something that God says that you can ignore and violate and don't have to do, run! Run! Even if you don't understand the whole thing, run! If you want to look it up or study it or look at something, that's fine. Go, and if you don't know yourself, sit down and ask somebody that is grounded. But run! Don't listen to that nonsense. But whoever keeps his word, truly the love of God is perfected in him. That's what God's love is. By this we know that we are in him. He who abides in him ought himself to walk just as he walked. So, let me summarize it all for you here. If somebody tells you to do something that Jesus would not do, they're a liar. If someone tells you to do something or not to do something that Jesus would do or did do, they're a liar. I'm going to give you 5 little rules that are very easy. Since I put it like that, let me back up and start again. If someone tells you to do something Jesus would not do, they're a liar. If somebody tells you not to do something that Jesus would do or did do, they're a liar. 3, if somebody tells you to eat something that Jesus wouldn't eat, they're a liar. If somebody tells you to say something that Jesus wouldn't say, they're a liar. Now you've got the rest of the story. And don't be deceived by all of the macaroni that's out there. Because a lot of it is really not that hard to figure out. But you might have to do a little work. I was going to say, you might have to crack a book. Well, a lot of times we don't even have all the books. Maybe you got to look up on the internet. Just look at what you're looking at on the internet. You know, don't go to stravanides.com or something like that, you know. But Yankee Doodle Dandy was not some crazy revolutionary, come up with some wacko foolishness. But people don't even know what he did or what it means. Same thing with God's truth. So many people don't even have a clue. They've all come to their conclusion, but their conclusion is a bunch of macaroni.